Hi, everybody. Before we begin, I'd like to officially invite you to an exciting event that you've been hearing about for quite a long time, and the details have finally arrived. On April 6th, 2025, you are invited to a casual meet and greet with your podcast hosts, an in-person gathering for our listeners and society members at the first ever museum exhibit devoted to the classic Gen X album, Free to Be You and Me. And together we will attend the Free to Be You and Me sing-along, I just want to emphasize that, sing-along in the museum's theater, an event they've already held twice and it has sold out every time. Our generation knows how important this album was and they show up. The event is curated and hosted by the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art in Amherst, Massachusetts. So if you've ever dreamed about a weekend in New England, this is your big chance. This is the Berkshires, that dreamy, bucolic, romantic getaway that you learned about by watching Cheers. If you'd like to join us in the Berkshires, here's what you can expect. A morning meet and greet with us, your PCPS podcast hosts, and a whole bunch of friends you haven't met yet. Some games and prizes, Free to Be You and Me trivia and bingo. If you want to study, just listen to our episode on Free to Be You and Me. You'll be the first readers to get a sneak peek at my new book, the sequel to Worldwide Crush, with book swag and advanced reader copies to win. We'll get a private guided tour of the Free to Be You and Me exhibit. And the ultimate pinnacle of the event, the Free to Be You and Me sing-along. So what do you need to do if you want to join us? Two steps. Step one. Buy your tickets for the sing-along at the museum website at carlemuseum.org. That's Carl with an E, museum.org. Step two, reserve your spot on the PCPS guest list by sending us an email or a DM. Then we'll send you an official invite so you can RSVP. You'll find all of this information in our weekly newsletter with links and also in our show notes. And keep your eye on our social media for the museum's Free to Be You and Me merch. I'm wearing my Free to Be You and Me t-shirt right now. If you're not able to join us on April 6th, we'll miss you. But the exhibit is ongoing. You can go right now if you want to. And it closes on April 6th. It's a beautiful spot, a beautiful museum, full of all the books you remember from when you were a child, plus this once-in-a-lifetime exhibit devoted to our generation's favorite album. If you have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out and ask. Thanks so much. We can't wait to see you, and please enjoy the show.
Realistically, I think that they would have put her in like track pants because realistically, all those 15-year-old boys would have been walking around with boners.
There would have been boners for sure.
Everywhere. Boners, boners, boners.
Hello, world. It's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who ran out of brownie mix for their Easy Bake Oven and never used it again.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're saving one of the most memorable single-season shows in Gen X history, the uber-relatable and sometimes controversial James at 15. I mean 16. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
He ain't got no walking stick. He don't need no ball and chain. If he ain't got no hand to kick, that don't mean nothing to James. Oh, oh, James singing.
And a do-si-do and an owl man left.
Swing your partner round and round.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I love that theme song.
No, it's like a hoedown.
It is a total hoedown song. Okay, and I have to tell you, poor Carolyn's face right now because she loves this song and she's sad.
But I know.
I mentioned in our preview episode when we were talking about the shows that we were going to be talking about, I said one thing that I remembered so hard was the theme song, and but I couldn't come up with it. I couldn't remember it. But I knew that when I heard it, I would cry. And then when I dipped into James at 15 for the first time this week, and that was the song, I was like, I am not crying. And
no,
I was actually, it was actually
pain.
No. Yeah. First of all, I didn't remember it. That wasn't the song that I remembered. And I was also irritated because I thought, this does not match
the show.
Your memory.
It doesn't, it doesn't match my memory at all. But poor Carolyn loves it.
You guys, and the whole, like, he ain't got no bowling chain.
He hasn't got any time.
You know what I need to do?
He's not a husband.
You know what I need to do when I listen to that theme song is I need to pop an aluminum can of beer.
Beer.
That says it just beer across it like James does and throw it out. And here's the thing, Kristen, I'm so glad to hear you say that because when you said that last week, I was like, okay, because as you're going to hear, I didn't watch the show. And when I first heard that theme song, I was seriously questioning your musical taste. I was like, what? Now, Carolyn, it's okay. We don't all have to agree. Carolyn, well, now it's Carolyn's time to defend.
Well, I'm not going to defend. It's just perfect. And it's perfect for that little opening montage. It is, as he's just like, you know, kind of just gallivanting through life. And here's something that's sad, though, because when after Kristen had shared with us that this she loved the theme song and she was going to get teary. And so when I hear it, I just have this big smile on my face and I think, oh, Kristen's hearing it right now, right, too. And she's all excited like I am. Oh, that makes me so sad. And listen, I mean, I know it's kind of it's a little cheesy, which is we'll talk about a little bit in this episode. The show's a little cheesy. That's all part of the gig. But didn't it remind you of like the Fall Guy? Did you not like the Fall Guy theme song?
Well, maybe, no, I didn't like that one either. James at 15 is so not the Fall Guy. Like, I just think that after, like, episode 9 or 10, the people were like, we got to get rid of this.
Do we have another song yet? Somebody say
he ain't got no bowling chain.
It's the very first line. He ain't got no walking stick.
And what is a walking stick? What teenager uses a walking stick?
Guys, you're too literal. That's usually me. We're not like saying everything in the song is what he's doing. It's just more of like the, you know, he's just going through life like he doesn't need anything. He doesn't have a care in the world. He doesn't need a walking stick. He doesn't need anything.
He's got nothing weighing him down like a heavy stick or a ball
and chain.
There
you go. That's it.
Yes,
that's it. All righty.
That theme didn't match the show. I was like,
yes, it did not match.
It wasn't the right tone for the show. Now, I will say when he becomes 16.
So it's episode 12, right? Episode 12.
And all of a sudden, I like my head shot up and I was like, what? What's happening? It's a different theme song. And
it's a different theme song.
I was so pleased with their change up.
And that was the one that I did remember. And this is memorable because it does match the tone precisely. And it's a song that is written and performed by England Dan and John Ford Coley. Duh, no wonder we love it. Hard hands. Hard hands.
Hard hands for those mustachioed men.
Yes.
James like a river that flows. There's so much to know. There's so much out there for you. James, you got it all in your hands. And there ain't nothing to stand in your way.
All right, listeners, today we're actually traveling back in time to 1977 to talk about a show that was actually ahead of its time. That was James at 15/16, starring Lance Kerwin. So the pilot episode for James at 15 was a two-hour-long made-for-TV movie that aired on NBC on September 5th, 1977. You guys, it was the highest-rated program on television for that week.
Really?
Go figure.
Oh, good for them.
So yeah, so that really helped give the green light for it to become a regular series on NBC. Now, as we've stated, it was a single-season show. It aired from October 12, 1977 to June 29, 1978, with 20 episodes.
And that's it.
Yes, but it was 20 episodes. That's a lot of episodes, people.
Not eight.
That's three seasons of a streaming show right now. Three
exactly.
plus. For a
that's
lot of
6 years of shrinking.
You know, that's true. When you had 20 show seasons, 22 show seasons, you became part of this family and you got to build relationships with these people.
Yeah.
Now you might not do that till season two, which is 2 or 3 years.
That's right.
You know, to get to season 20.
You knew James. You knew James. You knew all of his friends.
You know his family. You knew his relationship with his parents really well. Yeah.
Right.
I want to draw a comparison to another single season truth-telling teen angst show, and that is Freaks and Geeks. It's the same thing where it is so pointed at the teen audience. It is so from the perspective of the teens, and it only lasts for a year, despite the fact that the reviews are outstanding and people adore it. But it must be that the people who adore it is just not a big enough audience, and yet people feel so strongly about it. And people today, I mean, we're talking about Freaks and Geeks today, that show was on 26 years ago for one season. And James at 15 holds the same place in people's hearts for many people. There are some Gen Xers, if you were only 3 or 4 years old at the time, you may not know this show. But if you were 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you're like, James at 15! For one season, you looked forward to that show every single week.
Well, to set this up a little bit for our listeners, the show was created from the mind of Dan Wakefield. Now, Dan Wakefield was a journalist and novelist up until this point. He had never written for TV. Dan wrote a book that came out in 1970 called Going All the Way. And it told the story of two young Korean War veterans trying to reacclimate to domestic life in 1950s Indianapolis. So producer Joseph Harvey, he recognized the potential in Wakefield's concept in his book, Going All the Way, and he brought the idea to NBC because the network was seeking to capture this elusive audience of teenagers, okay? Because we had like the Happy Days and all that going on, and we had bionic people.
So many bionic people.
Wanted to kind of capture the teenage audience with real life issues that were honest and that most of all that teenagers could relate to. So James at 15 was born. The show's creators carefully selected a young and very talented cast. Need I say more? We've got our star Lance Kerwin.
I know. It's so
loved
true.
Loved him. And let's just take a second to say what a perfect casting that was. Okay.
It really was.
Didn't he truly look like the boy who'd have a locker next to you or would sit behind you in algebra?
Yes.
If you dropped your pencil, he'd actually like pick it up and hand it to you.
He was so normal. He was so normal looking. And yet at the same time, you know, he's the kind of kid that you would develop a crush on. Like, you didn't have a crush on him the first time you saw him. He wasn't that kid. It was after he picked up your pencil.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're like, oh, you're kind of cute.
100%. And I think that's why I loved him so much. So in the 2-hour pilot, we meet James, a 15-year-old sophomore in high school living in Portland, Oregon. And we meet his family. Okay, and here's where some of the casting is kind of fun. He has a younger sister played wonderfully, I think, by Kim Richards. Okay, we all might remember Kim from the Witch Mountain movies. She was a nanny in The Professor. And more recently, even my children know Kim Richards because she starred in The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Which just never lined up with Escape from Witch Mountain for me.
No.
It just doesn't work.
Did you guys know I loved Kim Richards as a little
girl
from Witch Mountain and just from any, she was in a lot of
Little House on the Prairie
or whatever.
Yeah. And they were a great brother and sister. They were a good pairing.
Very real. Mm-hmm. Yes. He has an older sister who is away at college. His dad is an English professor. His mom is a stay-at-home mom. And in the movie, we see James living this average suburban life in Portland, Oregon. He's not a jock. He's not a nerd. He's just regular. Like Kristen said before, he's just kind of normal. He's on the swim team. He loves photography, and he has a part-time job loading groceries.
And he loves Lacey.
Yes.
He is a normal 15-year-old boy because he is completely centered on his crush, right?
Mm-hmm. So in this episode, he experiences, like many do at this age, his first love, which just so happens to be someone we also all loved in 1977. That would be Mary Ingalls. Melissa Sue Anderson. And her role as Lacey is the farthest cry you can get from her role and her life in Walnut Grove. Am I right, ladies? Mm-hmm.
And that has to be one reason that it did so well on that night, right? They chose really carefully, like, who are the tweens and teens going to show up for? Because they may or may not have known the name Lance Kerwin. They know Melissa Sue Anderson, and you know her face was in the trailer. And it was probably in the trailer kissing.
Oh, yeah.
Every time she opened her mouth, it's Mary.
Well, what time we have, we'll do what we want, not what they want.
Yeah.
Well, think of it like a war. Like people in the midst of a war, you know? There's only so many weeks till Paris falls. But till it does, we're gonna live.
It's Mary. And she looks like Mary. The hair is almost the same, especially when she wore it down when she was, on Little House on the Prairie. And then to just see Mary making out with, like, you know, on the couch when she's supposed to be babysitting her brother. And I was like, I couldn't switch.
Yeah. It was Mary in designer jeans.
That's exactly right. the TV movie is going to really set us up for the way the series will unfold. Because one night at dinner, James's parents inform him and his sister that his father has accepted a new job in Boston. Okay, he lives in suburban Portland, and they're going to be moving to Boston. And neither James nor his sister are happy about the news. And oh boy, did I feel that. We've all shared that, how moving impacted the three of us in different ways. Mm-hmm. I would be making a move in my mind very similar to that from Texas to New Jersey just a few months later. So all the goodbyes, all of those moments in the show really got me in the gut. But what happens after he finds out they're moving? The race is on with Mary Ingle. I mean, Lacey, because they're in love and they want to prove that to each other.
Have sex.
As a kid, I didn't think that they wanted to have sex. And even when I was watching it right now, I was like, are they just talking about kissing? And it wasn't until they were in the sleeping bag outside and they start taking their clothes off. I'm like, oh, no, we're talking about more than kissing. All right.
I think it was they felt like that was something that they were supposed to do. You thought everybody else was doing it. We had a scene a little bit earlier in the movie where another super cute guy, Vince Van Patten, was kind of talking about how you make the moves and...
In all football analogies, yeah. Does Vince Van Patten, is that sweatband around his head, is that permanent?
I do believe it is permanent. Yeah. I believe it, maybe.
Yes, it is.
He can't take it off,
brain
right?
I don't know.
No, right.
Yeah, because it's in every show. His head on.
Yeah,
his,
because he's not a tennis player or anything in the show. He's a football player, but he's still wearing the sweatband
all the time. I know. It's his thing, I guess. People don't really wear sweatbands that much anymore.
It's not a thing anymore. Bjorn Borg. Bjorn Borg in the sweatband. So when James at 15 actually begins the true series, he's a teenager newly moved to Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It became very clear to me why I loved this show so much, because James at 15 has the exact same kind of 1970s ethos that I grew up with, which is mildly unconventional in a traditional family setting, which it's like not stinky granola people, but where you're like the dads wore cords and the mom made sun tea in the backyard, right? Your parents, they weren't hippies. Your parents weren't hippies by any means. They might have been too old to be hippies. My parents were too old to be hippies. They were not cool, but they were looser and more socially conscious than parents of previous generations. I, like James, lived in a leafy city neighborhood full of academics. Everyone in this show, even his parents, who are supposed to be the squares, who just don't understand, right? Like that's a theme in adolescence. Your parents just don't understand. But even his parents speak about equity and speaking up for your rights and having a voice all the time. Whether it be, it's like it's every episode, whether it be in civic society or just in your own adolescent life. It was very comforting and familiar for me. I didn't know that there were neighborhoods where you weren't allowed to call adults by their first names. I didn't know this. I didn't know there were places where people said sir and ma'am, and you did as you were told. I didn't know that. I laughed so hard when James calls his dad sir, and his dad says, please knock off all that sir stuff. I'm a person. And that is so my neighborhood. Sir and ma'am were not signifiers of respect where I came from. They were signifiers of being old and out of date. And it reminded me of how my dad helped me write a petition for my fourth grade class when we weren't going on any field trips. And Miss Barry's class had already gone on two field trips, and that's not fair. And instead of my dad explaining to me that children should be seen and not heard, and my teacher is doing the best she can, my dad said, well, the democratic thing to do would be to, you know, get signatures from all of the students in the classroom. This is just exactly how it went in James at 15. They say democratic and democracy constantly in this show, which is code for kids are people too, right? For example, when James is eavesdropping on his parents, when they're fighting about when to tell the kids about they're moving to Boston, and his mom says, we're always yakking at them about democracy, and then we don't even include them in this decision. That is so 70s, right? And when James finds out that he's moving, the reaction from everybody, James, his sister, his girlfriend, is resistance. It's not, oh no, this is sad and we have to move. They talk about starting a movement. Mm-hmm. They want to start a kids' rights movement, or they're going to go on strike. Yep. They want to take political action against their parents. And because these kids want a say in how their lives go. This is the hallmark of coming of age. You can't tell me what to do. This mm-hmm. is what resonated with us as kids, mm-hmm. right? Which I think is what the producer and the writer wanted to say. You can't tell me what to do. I'm a person too. Those are the feelings that they wanted to identify with. It's diametrically opposed to the era of doing what your parents say because they say so and you don't need to know why.
Right.
That's Leave It to Beaver.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is a new era.
Kind of Happy Days too. I mean, it's that 1950s yes.
right.
kind of thing we saw.
I also wonder a little bit about it being post-bicentennial. Right? Weren't we talking an awful lot about democracy in 1976 mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and taxation without representation? And that's not fair. And everybody has a voice. And it was Jimmy Carter and the little people.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock. And I think that's reflected in James at 15.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I think all of this unconventional, traditional family ethos is also seen in the friends that James had. These are the people who are going to round out our characters. We have James, and we have his friend Sly, and we have his friend Marlene. Each and every one of them is so singular. They're so different from each other, and they make such a good triad, and they're also easy for us to love. So you want every single one of these kids to succeed and be who they are. Marlene wants to be an anthropologist.
Yes.
She's always going to the library at Harvard. I mean, it's so – and she always has, like, a flak jacket on.
And she is a good friend.
That's another
message we get in – James at 15 is you can have a friend who's a guy who, and the guy is, you're his friend, he's your friend. And that's just what it is. It's not anything
yes.
romantic. It's not that you see each other in these sexual ways. It's that it's okay to have friends of the opposite sex and be close to them.
Yeah. Someone you can call who will give you the number to the free clinic when you think you have ED with no questions asked.
Yes, right.
That's right. And so these characters are coming of age also. They're helping each other come of age. They're all coming of age. Coming of age is the reason that this show exists. All caps. James of 15 differs a little bit in that it is a slice of life portrayal of one kid's coming of age. It's not full of drama. It is a slice of life. Think, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, where the things that happen are often completely and utterly normal in any average person's life. But we're hooked on the relatability of the story and how we get inside people's heads and see that they're having the same feelings and difficulties as us. Unlike today, where TV is so plot heavy, especially in the era of limited series where you get six episodes and something big has to happen each time and there's a big reveal at the end. There's no big reveal in James at 15. We're just watching his life unfold. And for me, a kid in high school, that is all the premise that I need. That's all the drama you need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's nothing more than that because that alone is rife with material.
Kristen, it's making me think. You know, Judy Blume, one reason we loved mm-hmm. Judy Blume books so much is even if they were controversial, not to us or thankfully to our parents who loved us reading them, mm-hmm. but to all these people who so sadly still today think, you know, find fault with them and want to ban them.
Right.
But she was tackling issues that kids go through or thoughts that they have, fantasies that they have for mm-hmm. sure, mm-hmm. that so many people were coming down on, right? Saying, no, absolutely not. You can't read that. You can't talk about menstruation in the school, or you can't talk about masturbation or sex or whatever. But what we've talked about when we celebrate Judy Blume here on the podcast, and what I know our listeners feel as well, and millions, thankfully others, is that it's such an accurate representation of what teenagers yes. are going through. You can't,
yes.
Thankfully we can't ban teenagers' thoughts or teenagers' fantasies, right?
Thank God.
Yeah.
Because they're so real and they're so true. Mm-hmm. And kids need, I mean, this is just me on my soapbox, but kids need to see that and they need to
yeah.
read that. And they need to feel that they're not alone.
James, lot of questions inside, got a whole world of hide. There's a lot to discover.
They hit the themes hard in James at 15, all of them very familiar to each and every one of our own lives. And at the end of the day, James at 15 is about the hierarchy of high school, when the big, powerful seniors have Adam's apples and cars, and James hasn't even sprouted hair anywhere on his body yet. And that makes you feel powerless, right? But you're definitely in your feelings, and you fall in love so easily, like
so
pretty
easily.
Much every episode. You fall in love every episode, and yet How will you become a sexual being if you don't have a car or an Adam's apple? This is a big concern. And like we talked about with Lacey, Melissa Sue Anderson, it's about that first time you get the opportunity to have a girlfriend and all you can think about is making out. That is it. But you have nowhere to go to do these things. You have no privacy. This is the plight of the teenager. This is all you think about, not school or grades or your future like your parents think. You're sitting in class and you're thinking of places where you can go to be alone so you can make out. Like there's the movie theater, there's the garage, yeah. Then maybe when she's babysitting, or maybe we should go camping. This is so utterly normal, it hurts. Like this is the only thing that mm-hmm. occupies their brains. It's about feeling like you don't have a say in your own life, which again is the predicament of being 15. You want so badly to be an adult, but everyone is still treating you like a child and telling you what to do, like you have to move to Boston. And so you make attempts to take control, like maybe you run away and you partner up with Kate Jackson.
Who doesn't?
When you're hitchhiking and she's hitchhiking in these beautiful boots with her pants tucked in, just like I was trying to do. Yes, and a beautiful shearling coat. She's just hitchhiking and you meet up with Kate Jackson, who talks about equitable relationships and being generous with fellow travelers on this planet. And she treats you like the adult that you crave to be. But you fall in love with her too.
And of course you don't.
And you're back to being a child when she explains that you can only be friends because you're 15 and she's one of Charlie's angels. Like, it's just,
right?
It's just not going to work.
I thought you liked me a lot too.
I do, James. But it's in a different way. We're friends. Tiger and I might be lovers.
Oh.
But I can't predict the future. But if I feel that it's right, if I feel it would be a good thing for both of us, that we both care about each other and understand each other, then I might stay with him.
Just for a night?
Oh, just because something doesn't last doesn't mean it's ugly. It can be beautiful.
And one, you mentioned this earlier, Carolyn, one very clever way that they showed James's lack of control and how he exerted control was by giving him a rich fantasy life. Both the made-for-TV movie and the TV show are full of these fantasy sequences. So, like when Melissa Sue Anderson drives away with the guy with the Adam's apple. In a car. Obviously, he has a car and an Adam's apple. And James imagines how they get into a horrible accident.
Oh, yeah.
And he rushes in to save her from the mangled vehicle. He even has to give her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And of course, the senior boy who's driving, he dies. Because, yeah. you know, yeah. that's just what happens. His fantasy about Kate Jackson is that they are two Robin Hood characters. And they're slinging bows and arrows at the bad guys. And this solidifies their bond in little Robin Hood outfits. It's super cute. But also notice how in his fantasy with Kate Jackson, it is equitable. They are in equal partnership, just like she talks about when they're hitchhiking. So he's not rescuing her. He's not saving her. They're fighting the bad guys side by side. And she's like a foot taller than he is.
And you guys, those little fantasy sequences are my favorite part
they're
of the show.
So good.
Because they're so real. And
yeah.
I did not watch James at 15, not because I wasn't allowed. I was 8 years old. I wasn't even on my radar. I was, you know, still playing with my Fisher-Price, you know, toys and Barbies and whatever. But like, I can just so see the importance of this show and the importance of all these themes that the mere 20 episodes touched on and tackled for the 14, 15, 16-year-olds watching it.
Yeah.
Or the 10, 11, 12-year-olds. Yeah.
You guys were 10, 11, and 12, right?
To your point, it's all those things. It's like almost going to be, yes, like what's coming. Like this was my opportunity to kind of learn what's right around the bend. Like where else was I going to learn that? Or be
in a safe space, too.
Yes, exactly. With a cute guy to look at on the screen.
Well, that too.
It's like, you know, it's... That for me, it was like a little blueprint of what to expect and maybe how to walk through some of those chapters of life. That's what it meant to me.
even more than preparing, the things that he was going through were actually happening to me at 10 years old, too, because when he's imagining Melissa Sue Anderson getting in a car accident and rescuing her, I'm still thinking about the Scott Fenwick who is sitting in front of me, right? I may not be thinking about having sex with him, but I am thinking about being in my Robin Hood costume with him.
Yeah, riding in a car with him.
With him. So I'm having fantasies at 10 years old in the same way that James at 15 is. It's just that my fantasies stop at a certain point, but we're all in the same place. We're all having the same feelings, right? And so it was relatable on so many levels. And then when he took it further than I was, where my life was, well, that's just titillating. Right? Yeah. Like, that's just exciting. Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Armoire, the clothing rental and return company that Carolyn and Michelle and I have been using for just a little over 6 months now. Armoire makes getting dressed easy and a lot more fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build a more exciting wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz, select items you like, and the clothes show up at your door in just 2 days. Then, when you're ready for something different, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. In the past, I've fallen victim to the fast fashion addiction. It truly is an addiction, grabbing that cute t-shirt off the rack as I walk by with my cart, because it's only $10. But we all know what happens. That $10 t-shirt goes in the giveaway pile 6 months later because it now looks like a dish rag. Armoire allows me to indulge in higher quality materials that look so much better, and they feel better too. Armoire also allows me to take some risks and maybe try out a style I wouldn't normally commit to, because I don't have to commit to it. I borrow it, try it out, see how I feel, and send it back. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn, and I wanted to check in. It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore, because now there's Hormone Harmony, and you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
One of my favorite fantasy sequences in the pilot with Melissa Sue Anderson. I don't remember where it comes in, but he's imagining them as adults and being alone in a room.
Funny.
And he's like, what should we do? And she like reclines back on the couch and she says something like, I think we should we have some hot buttered rum?
Yes. He's reading a newspaper. Like, that's the most adult thing you could do.
Like in his little mind, that's what grown-ups drink. And actually, it's a very 1977s drink, let's be real. But, like, hot buttered rum. Also, they did such a good job on this show of really capturing what it's like to be 15 and in love. Every single person he has a crush on, he tells them he loves them.
He does. Yes.
I love you, Chris. I love
I'm
you.
In love.
Yes. And that's so real. It's not ridiculous. So if you're 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, mm-hmm. whatever, watching it, you're identifying with that. Nobody's telling him he's stupid. Nope.
Right. It's not a comedy.
It was representation of themes and concepts that we needed someone to be walking us through like this.
It was as if the show took him seriously. It wasn't poking fun at his ability to fall in love once a week. It was that this is what happens, and he's really in his feelings, and we're taking that seriously.
And with everybody. He's 15. He falls in love with his teacher, who happens to be a swim coach, who walks around in her bathing suit with 15-year-old boys. I was like, listen.
And he's in a Speedo.
I did have to think, realistically, I think that they would have put her in, like, track pants, because realistically, all those 15-year-old boys would have been walking around with boners.
There would have been boners for sure.
Everywhere. Boners, boners, boners. But he falls in love. You know, he asks people out to the dance that are out of his league or whatever. It's like, he's 15.
It's really, too, about leaning into your identity. They're in adolescence. What are we doing? We're becoming sexual beings and we're searching for our identity. Leaning into the things that make you you, so that you can adapt and settle into your new stage of life or into your new environment instead of fighting it and trying on the unfamiliar identities, trying to be somebody else. Like maybe when you arrive in Boston, you're going to borrow your dad's oversized suit coat and wear a tie to school because that's what see the kids in Boston doing, instead of wearing the sweater that you wore in Portland, and you just look ridiculous. So instead of doing that, you lean into who you are. You join the swim team. You use your photography so that you can start to see the beauty of this new place. And then you start making a name for yourself. And when he accomplishes this, when he leans into who he really is, he's not settling. He's really growing up. So in the end, it's like Boston is a metaphor for adolescence, right? Everything is new and different, and you don't know how to do anything or get anywhere. You're doing everything wrong, and you're supposed to know how to do all of these things, but you don't. Even the things you desperately know how you desperately want to do, you still don't know how to do it. Everything is so new. But if you relax and just be yourself, it will come naturally, organically, as it does for all people. Nobody stays a child forever, and the next thing you know, you have an Adam's apple.
And a little caterpillar on your upper lip.
Yes, exactly. It was so, and of course I never could have, would never think this as a child watching the show, but as I'm watching it now, I'm like, oh, I see. Boston is change. Adolescence is change. You're getting to know who you are. You're trying to find out where you belong and settling into it and figure out who you are. That's why they had to move to Boston.
Well, I would love to have had the opportunity to talk to Dan Wakefield about what you just said, Kristen. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, I think, at the age of 91. But he would have loved, I think, to have this conversation because of all the research
that
I did.
That would have been so great.
I didn't come across anything that said what you said as articulately. And I do believe, from what I have read, that's what he was trying to do. Would have loved to have said, yes, that.
To have known someone got it.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully, Dan, you're hearing us somewhere.
I hope you hear that, Dan.
You know, that we got it.
So at the intersection of these coming of age themes and the unconventional ethos that ran throughout the entire show is controversial topics. Naturally, of course, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, Carolyn, but one of the reasons the show ended was it was more than a lack of audience. It was because of disagreements about how these controversial topics should be portrayed. Because you had the kids or people to camp, and then you had the sir and ma'am camp, and they did not get along. So one reason they didn't get along is because James at 15 was delivering stories from the kids' point of view, showing how controversial things truly unfolded in the mind of their character. Like, hey, maybe we should make out in the garage. Like, that's a real thing that happened in the show. Let's make out in the garage because we don't have anywhere to go. And of course, you can imagine the sir and madam people are like, we don't want to teach people about making out in the garage, but we have to show it.
And on the show, though, this is just going back to like what you said about how it was the kind of ethos of it, and it was really reflecting where you grew up. But like, they get caught. His parents come out and get caught. And she just says, hey, how about you kids come in and I make you some hot chocolate? Like, nobody gets in trouble.
It was really a beautiful scene because, of course, what did you expect when the parents come out into the garage and knock on the window? And they're in the back seat, by the way. So the parents know they can't pretend they weren't making out. And when they roll down the window, that's all she says.
Yeah.
And you guys, I kid you not, there was more than one occasion in which I was, why would I do this in my own driveway? But like making out in a car in my own driveway, and my mom would come out and ask if we wanted hot chocolate.
Oh, maybe totally. She watched that episode.
Yes. Maybe she remembered James at 15. Would you guys like some hot chocolate? Mm-hmm. And so we would joke about that all the time. And when I saw that scene, I just cracked up. But it was kind of beautiful because it was his parents acknowledging, well, of course you're making out in the backseat of the car. You're 15. But let's come inside now. So that's where you can see the unconventional parenting taking place. And then you have the sir and ma'am people who wanted every controversial issue to be a very special episode with an adult delivering wise words that would show the kids the error of their ways. This was a recipe for disaster, right? They were not on the same page. And it eventually contributed to the end of the show, didn't it, Carolyn?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Because, yeah, we had the creator leaving over some of these conversations that you're having, the direction he wanted the show to go and the direction that the network wanted the show to go, and felt pressure from those pearl-clutching parents.
Mm-hmm. And it would not have been the same show. If they had gone the very special episode route, it's better that it ended.
I really respect Dan Wakefield for saying, that's not what I agreed to do. That's not what my show is going to be. And he was willing to walk away, probably from some money, but
good
this was
you.
Something he believed in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here's just a sampling of some of the issues tackled in just one short season. I just got to remind you, this is one season, people. These are all the things that happened. So we already talked about finding places to make out, which might include the controversial topic of heavy petting, like in a sleeping bag on a camping trip. There is a lot of pressure to lose your virginity. It might even be self-imposed pressure. They don't necessarily make it like the locker room going, are you still a virgin? It's more like him going, so have you done it? How about you? Mm-hmm. Have you done it? Trying to figure out where he fits into the status of everybody else. There's an episode called The Girl with the Bad Rep, which busts open the myth of the school slut, which, hint, it's never true. Those are always lies. There's an episode where he helps his friend who is deaf. The deaf boy wants to mainstream into James's high school, into a big city high school. He's always gone to a school for the deaf. And so Lance is going to take part in this, and it ends disastrously because bullying. But that also showed he wasn't just a hero. Right? They're not just like, let's solve the world's problems and I'm going to save this kid. No, instead they're like, this kind of sucked and it didn't work and you wanted to do something good and it failed.
Reality again. I mean, that's
it was just reality. Not everything ended like Different Strokes. Were your parents worried that you would run away and join a cult?
No.
No.
Because mine were.
Oh.
Understandable. Uh-huh.
It was a thing. Did you guys not get like any speeches about Moonies or anything like that?
Not really, but I have read that was a big thing, like the whole Satanist kind of culture, and that a lot of parents were really afraid of that. Mm-hmm. And that was a real thing for.
Coincidentally, it was at church. I remember my dad took me to some speaker about Moonies, and I did not even know, I was not in danger of this. I was not going to be a member of a cult. And it felt like a very special episode, my dad taking me to this thing. I'm like, Dad, I don't even like going to this church. You think I'm going to go to somebody else's church? Whatever. So anyway, James does dabble in sort of a culty sort of thing. And it's another instance in which James is shown to be flawed. He's not the perfect person. He's gullible, and he has to find his own way. And again, his parents aren't like, no, don't join a cult. They're like, we want you to be open-minded. Go ahead and check it out and see what you think. And he figures it out on his own. Or how about this for an episode description? James makes a new friend, and when she's not out scoring another coup as the school's star reporter, she's hitting the bottle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Rosanna and who is it Arquette. That's hitting the bottle?
Oh, yes, that would be Rosanna Arquette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And did you notice that in the first episode of the series, Rosanna Arquette is also in that one, but she's uncredited?
Oh, who is she?
I did not see.
She's just a girl. So James has a party because he hasn't found any friends at his new school. And so he decides to have a party at his house for newcomers. And the first person to knock on the door is Rosanna Arquette. And the YouTube video is so fuzzy, I couldn't see her face, but it was her voice. I was like, that's Rosanna Arquette. So she's on screen for maybe 3 seconds and that's it. And most famously, there's the episode that addresses James's first time. Everybody has one. It's a universal experience. Why doesn't anyone talk about it on TV?
Maybe because it's unusual when your uncle flies in from Florida to get you laid.
The title of the episode is The Gift.
It's and the gift is his
a hooker.
Uncle's birthday present is a 30-year-old hooker who he's like, here's the keys. And James like, I'm getting a car. This is fantastic.
Yes.
Meanwhile, he really needs to get out of there because he really does want to go get laid. But with his girlfriend, who he loves.
Yes.
I was just watching these the other day, and I'm sending Carolyn and Kristen texts, literally all caps. What the fuck? His uncle flew in from Florida to get his nephew laid. And I will say, as I kept watching, there's a redeeming message. She's like, well, you have to. Like, she won't let him leave.
The hooker won't let him leave, yeah.
Because she's saying, like, your uncle's going to be really upset. He got you, me, as a gift.
You don't use your gift.
But he's like, you know, you're probably really nice, but I feel like this should be with someone I love, and I do really love her. And so there is a very sweet message that they made sure to get across in there that he's saying to the 30-year-old hooker that his uncle bought for his 16-year-old nephew.
So you're right. It does go back to Kate Jackson when they're hitchhiking.
Right.
What does she say?
Well, they meet another man while they're hitchhiking, and Kate and this other gentleman seem to like each other, and James wonders if they're going to, you know, basically have sex, and she explains, well, I haven't decided yet, but, and then she kind of gives that really truthful.
She gives him the sex talk. She gives him the talk, basically.
She really does. She gives him the talk his dad should have given him.
100% right. She does, yeah.
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 The hitchhiker gives him the talk he should have gotten from his dad.
And also, I will say that had his dad given him that same talk, he would have been like, Dad, no, just leave.
It's
go
gross.
Away. But coming from her, it was totally
yeah.
different.
But basically, you'll know when it's right, and it should be with somebody that you care about.
Yes.
And that was Kate Jackson's message to him. And that's kind of the message they're giving us in this episode. It's not about just this one time with a hooker.
Yeah, because he really does not for 1 second consider having sex with the hooker. Because he's coincidentally, his girlfriend is waiting for him because she has the house to herself. And this is their one opportunity. Remember the theme about how you can never be alone? This is their one opportunity and they're going to do it. And she's an exchange student from Sweden and she's going back to Sweden. So it really is the only opportunity. And here's this hooker going, come on. And he's like, I can't. My girlfriend is waiting for me and I'm going to do it with her. Because he really is
her.
In love. I'm in love with her. It's very, and remember, he's tiny. He does not, he's not going to have sex with that woman. She is like a bosom. It's not going to work. And he doesn't even for a second consider it. It's so awkward. But it was a super controversial and very anticipated episode. Everyone was waiting for this episode.
Yeah. My mom, this was when she let me, you know, she said, oh, it's that episode tonight. Like, you go in. She wanted me to see it.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
And you were, what, 12?
Again, it was
13 by then.
I was 12 going on 13.
Oh, my God.
No, I wasn't 13 yet.
I read that one of the most controversial parts of that episode that people had such a problem with wasn't as much that he had sex. It was that he had unprotected sex. Because the second part of the episode is the Swedish exchange student is worried that she might be pregnant. She's worried she's going to get pregnant. And so now there's about 10 minutes of panic. And it's probably about 3 days of panic. But, you know, he's talking with his friend about, what do I do? And they're talking about being a parent. And he's, it's very sweet.
They
but
go
it's
all
very
the way
terrifying.
There.
They go all the way. Yeah. And then she's not pregnant. But
what's really interesting is this is the episode where Dan Wakefield makes the decision to leave because his original script and what he wanted to have in the storyline was that there was birth control. But the NBC censor was like, nope, the viewers are not going to tolerate any discussion about birth control.
Oh
so, no,
God.
We're not going to have that. Not only are we not going to have that, we want the message that you have to pay a price if you have sex. That's the message we want to give to the viewer. Like, there's a punishment, basically, for partaking in this. And that's when Dan Wakefield said, you know, I'm out of here. That's I'm not standing for that message.
And you can feel that influence in the episode because on the one hand, you feel Dan, the spirit of Dan Wakefield, but then the actual sex part, as a kid, even as an adult, they certainly don't show a thing. It's just nothing. Like they're kissing on the couch, and the next day he is like walking on air, and you're supposed to conclude from him walking on air that he is no longer a virgin. It was not clear to me as a kid at all. I still was like, so what is virgin, and what I didn't know.
But
what
even
the big
when
deal
she
was
said
about.
She was worried she was pregnant, you didn't. Get it?
Yeah. Then I put two and two together, but I still wondered when it happened. And there is just a passing glance at birth control. It's so coded. I did not know what they were talking about. I barely knew as an adult because it's such a passing glance. You can feel that they're like, no, you can't say that, which ironically is the thing that they should be saying.
Sure. Right.
Right? Not that exactly. There's a cost, but that you need to be responsible. And so then, of course, this whole part, the part about her thinking that she's pregnant felt to me tacked on. It felt like they called all the actors up and called them back to set.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh my God, that is
totally
real?
Dead.
Yeah. So the script, they had it rewritten and had to bring people back.
I guess you could call this part realistic or unbelievable. Both of them can be true because it feels so out of left field because there's no condom breaking. There was no mention of a late period. It just feels like someone said to them, you know what can happen, right? And she just calls him and says, I'm worried I'm pregnant.
Mm-hmm. It's so dumb.
It's so dumb.
I mean, it's so it doesn't even add up in terms of like, you know, timing. And if you were really thinking
that's
about
right,
it.
That's right, because it was yesterday. But, we had sex yesterday. I'm worried I'm pregnant.
It was I have skipped a period or anything like that. It was just all of a sudden.
They weren't going to say that if they can't say birth control.
That's true.
They probably weren't going to
say
period.
Well, I thought about that too,
anything.
Because when she calls him and she goes, good news. I'm not pregnant. And he's like, are you sure? How do you know? And she's like, I'm just not. I was waiting for her to say, well, I got my period this morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really, the message the network wanted to give and that these pearl clutchers wanted was don't do it. It wasn't even like this could happen, which, I mean, it kind of was, but it was more of the message like, don't do it because then this will happen. So it just wasn't realistic because this was going to happen. I mean, the act was going to happen regardless of how pearl clutching you are. Why not, as we say, give the good information, talk about the birth control, have that be part of the storyline. Truly, that is what you want.
Right.
You think, oh, that's not even going to be an issue because they're going to watch this episode and never want to do it. So why would they need birth control? Because they don't want to do it, which we know is ridiculous.
It's all of it is not true and not effective. Let's just look at the teen pregnancy rates in Texas compared to Minnesota, right? It's all in the numbers, people. It's all in the numbers. So that episode is followed up when Christina, the person that he loves and lost his virginity to, goes back to Sweden. And now James feels a little sluggish and his mind immediately goes to, oh no, I have VD.
It's because they watch. He goes in and they have to. You know, it burns when he pees. He says, "When I go to the John, he tells
Sly,
it burns when he goes to the John." Yeah, okay. And then they go immediately into the classroom to watch the movie again, and
the VD movie,
and the teacher says, I know we've seen this before, but there's been a huge breakout of, you know, outbreak, whatever, of VD. So we have to watch it again. And, also, James is, like, sleeping on the – he's so tired.
Oh, yeah, he's so tired.
And then
he's
the first thing they say is the symptom is burning while urinating. And so he's like, zoinks!
Yeah. But they really avoid saying burns when I pee, right? They really focus on the tired. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't want to refer to penises, like nothing. No one urinates. No one has a penis. And
painful when I go to the John, he says.
Yeah. And then he goes to his friend Marlene, the wise and open-minded and even-keeled Marlene, who, of course, has an underground newspaper that has a phone number for a free clinic. Because he's not going to go to his parents and be like, you guys, I think I have VD. Can we go to the doctor? And so he goes to this free clinic, and Tony Tennille basically is his doctor. Like, she's the cutest little free clinic nurse you've ever seen.
She's the nurse, but he keeps saying, when's the doctor going to come in? Where's the doctor?
Yeah. I think he's worried he's going to have to show his wiener to her. I don't want to pull down my pants in front of you. And in the end, of course, he doesn't have VD. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He's healthy. But there's all sorts of drama that would only take place in the 70s because there's a lot of emphasis on it's important that you inform your partner. That you, if you have this, if the result is positive, you need to inform your partner. Can I count on you to do that? And he promises, yes, he would. Okay, that means he has to make a long distance phone call to Sweden. How do you pay for that? And so then the episode becomes him like begging quarters off of people mm-hmm. because he needs $11.40 for a 3-minute call to Sweden. It's so of the 70s and sad and sweet all at the mm-hmm. same time. He's not a perfect person. He makes a lot of mistakes. Like back in the episode about the girl that they think is the school slut, he's like, awesome, I'm going to get in on this. And, of course, does some horrible things. That's overstating it. He comes on to her. And she's like, what are you doing? I thought we were friends. And he's like, well, I thought you did it with everybody. And so he's being kind of a dick. Yeah, James, come on. But James learns that how hurt she's been by everybody thinking this about her, and then he becomes her champion. So, you know, he's not perfect. But most poignantly, this was the most realistic episode, even more than the losing the virginity one, because as much controversy as that one had, at the end, the Pearl Clutchers got control of the episode, and there were some difficulties with it. Like, we didn't know they had sex. The episode where the death of his friend from a rapidly growing form of cancer— how they did this so well in a single episode, I have no idea. But they did it. And there's this musical montage of James processing this experience to the soundtrack of Simon and Garfunkel's Bookends theme.
What time it was, and what a time it was, it was. A time of innocence, a time of confidence.
And it just busted me wide open. Open mouth crying. I'll never be able to hear that song again without crying.
Yeah, that's a heavy theme. And like mm-hmm. you said, to do it in 1 hour, mm-hmm. that was some really good use of music, good writing, mm-hmm. all of those things.
And all very realistic too. Like it wasn't melodramatic at all. It was, how would 15-year-old boys manage the news of a terminal illness and what they are to each other? And how do they do it? Awkwardly. They do it mm-hmm. a lot by avoiding it. And mm-hmm. so then when his mm-hmm. friend actually dies, then how does that happen? It's not a lot of tears. It's a lot of shock and parents wringing their hands about how do you relate that information to your 15-year-old son? It is quite heartbreaking.
As you pointed out, Kristen, how the Simon and Garfunkel song was so effectively used in the montage and as James was processing this news about his friend. And they really used music very effectively in this whole series. And you guys, I went back to look at the songs that were used in all of the episodes.
Like hit songs, big songs.
Hit songs. Like you remember, this is kind of AM, kind of going into the world of FM.
Yeah.
So we're right on that cusp. But we're also, at my age at least, listening to a lot of radio. So these songs are familiar. And they're in the background of James's life, much like they're in the background of our own lives.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, you guys, I went and looked at the list of songs at the end of every episode. And I am going to make a playlist called James at 15/16 the songs, because they were epic. And I want to just share a few of those with you.
And some of them were like the montage where it's helping us understand a scene. Sometimes it's the radio that's on in the back in their house. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's at the sub shop where the kids hang out and they dance. This is what I thought adolescence would be. You go and you order a Coke with your friends and then there are people behind you dancing. Yeah. Just at the sub shop.
To Strawberry Letter 22.
Yes. And it really grounded it in both the time, because these songs were what you were hearing on the radio that minute, which is so smart because it helped mm-hmm. us feel that the show was current mm-hmm. and not out of date. Sometimes when you see shows, they'll put like some pretend music, like if they're dancing, they put pretend music. And that's just dumb. That it looks like dating game music or something like that. These were the songs that we would actually be dancing to in our living rooms. And it just made everything feel so current and fresh. And it must have cost a lot of money.
Well, yeah, because again, when I was looking at these lists of songs, these are top 40 Billy Joel sticks. You guys, 3 by Sean.
What? I missed that.
Yeah, really?
3 yes. Sean Cassidy songs?
Yes, we have To Do Run Run, That's Rock and Roll, and I think Hey Deanie.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
This is so exciting for me because one of my very, very vivid memories of James at 15 was that this is the first place I ever heard the song Cold as Ice by Foreigner. You're as cold. It was such a good song. So in watching the show, I'm like, oh, I want that song. I want that song. Yeah. And then I started hearing it on the radio, and that just created a lot of excitement for me. And it's a memory I've never let go of, because here's the show I couldn't watch, right? It was gone. We didn't have streaming yet. And yet I had this memory of Cold as Ice.
And now I bet every time you hear that song, you think James at 15.
100%.
Even as like a 50-year-old woman, you're like, oh, I know that song, James at 15.
Yeah, it's from James at 15.
And just the two, three episodes that I watched that I remembered to write down, and I know there were more, but one was Slip Sliding Away. Such a great song. Mm-hmm. Slip Sliding Away. And then another one in the Gift episode, the Losing the Virginity, that they play over and over, and they even play an instrumental version of it, is Just the Way You Are.
Yes, that was like the theme. That was like their love theme.
Of like, the love theme of
James at 15.
James and Chris, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's, I saw, and a lot of this is in the sub shop, Baby Come Back. Short People by Randy Newman.
Short people got no reason. Short people got no reason. Short people got no reason to live.
This is a big deal, because this is when James is having some confidence issues about being shorter than a lot of the girls. And he hates this song.
What a very real thing that boys go through when they get to be about 15, 16. The girls they like are taller than them, and that has to be so almost like emasculating for
them. So very
which
real.
On
and On by Stephen Bishop. Just Remember I Love You. Just Remember I Love You. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. There's a lot of Paul Simon. We talked about bookends.
Yeah. We've got Come Sail Away. We hear that by Styx. We hear Lay Down Sally by Eric Clapton.
I hate that song.
Kristen, this is one of several appearances by another one of your heartthrobs. We have Love is Thicker Than Water by Andy Gibb.
What episode is that one in?
That would be episode 21, the very last one.
Oh.
I know that it was episode 2 called Friends that has Cold as Ice.
One thing that we haven't talked about, music obviously played a big role in this show. And another way that the music played a big role is that James is a flute player. And he has his little flute, and he walks with his little flute case. He brings it to school. And then at one point, he meets up with some musicians, and he's like, do you want to jam? And so then James is like jamming on his flute. Jamming.
Remember, 70s is the year of the decade of the flute. I want to bring the flute back into popular music.
And he is just a boy playing the flute. We have to remember that this is the 70s, and girls play flutes and boys play trumpets. But no, James going to jam on that flute. And only Lance Kerwin could pull that off with his little Peter Tork hair swinging around.
Little frog boy.
Oh, yeah. Lance.
I know. But Lance was, he was a legitimate teen idol.
Yeah, he was.
And I think this show really made him that, even though in the 70s, he had, and before James at 15, Lance Kerwin had appeared in a number of TV series, lots and lots of guest roles, you guys, on things like Emergency, Little House on the Prairie. He played Danny Peters in its first season. Shazam, Gunsmoke, like I said earlier, Escape to Witch Mountain, Wonder Woman, The Bionic Woman, Cannon.
Wow.
I mean, he has a huge filmography. Yeah. But he also appeared in a fair amount of TV movies. He really broke out in The Loneliest Runner, which first aired on NBC on December 20th, 1976. He's really, really cute in it, too. He's like, he really did kind of mature from that movie to the next year being in James at 15. The show only lasted, 21 episodes, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he became such a teenage heartthrob, Carolyn, right?
She's nodding.
It's, again, the boy next door kind of teen heartthrob.
Totally.
It's not a Sean Cassidy. It's not Andy Gibb. Mm-hmm. It's the one you just might get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's attainable.
Knew who Lance Kerwin was because of Tiger Beat and because he was all over my sister's walls. He went on then to famously star in the two-part TV movie Salem's Lot in 1979, which is based on the Stephen King.
Scary as shit. Can we just say that, everybody?
Yes. Scary as shit. Oh, my God.
With David Soul, R.I.P.
That's right.
And then, of course, he was in The Boy Who Drank Too Much, that iconic ABC after-school special with Scott Baio in 1980. I mean, arguably the most after-schooly special of the after school specials, right? And one I really want to focus an entire episode on soon. Post 1980, he did have a fair amount of credits, but he struggled a lot, as they do. Right. We're not going to focus on the drugs, the alcohol, or the falsifying documents charges because this is a celebration of James. Damn it. I hope that he did turn things around. To look at his pictures, it's a little bit hard. He looks like he kind of had a hard life, and you really can't see James in the late pictures of Lance Kerwin. And he died just 2 years ago at age 62 from heart disease.
That sounds, that sounds like somebody who had a very hard life, and it's hard to divorce somebody who was such a prolific child actor from an early death. Right?
I know. And it's another one of those sad stories to me of these young child actors who just were like forgotten. And, you know, there's a lot of them that had really hard lives and died young. And it makes me really sad that they weren't maybe given some of the help that they needed. When
they weren't taken care of.
But like I said, let's keep celebrating Cutie Patootie and James.
His legacy, really. His legacy, right? He did so many things. He did all of those things. But look at the impact that kid had in 20 episodes of television. It's pretty amazing.
So, okay, let's just get out our shovels and do a little digging and see if there are any fun rabbit hole facts that any of us came up with during our research. I will start with letting you know that, did you know that Kate Jackson was nominated for an Emmy Award for her portrayal of the hitchhiking friend in the TV
for
pilot?
Oh, good for her. Yeah. That was such a good character. I mean, she really was Sabrina. I mean, the way she dressed, she was just hitchhiking.
This was a different network. I mean, it was
same year. Yeah, she was in Angels at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we would have recognized her. And also, as a young girl, kind of looked up to her like, whatever Kate Jackson says, it's real, and we should listen to Kate Jackson.
I probably wanted to hitchhike after.
I was just about to say, how many teenage girls ran away and hitchhiked?
We've talked about a couple of the guest stars, but I did also want to add, we talked about Vince Van Patten, Rosanna Arquette. Charlene Tilton makes an appearance, as does Vic Tayback. Mel.
Where was Charlene Tilton?
I believe she was on the one with the deaf student. Did you watch that one?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But there was and there was so many. One? No, it could have been because there was a young girl that looked really familiar, and I was waiting to see who it was, and I didn't catch her name. I bet
I
that
think
was her.
That was the episode.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, because she was really little. She was really little. Vic Tayback, Mel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And and Easy Reader's girlfriend is Sly's mom. from Electric Company. The librarian for Electric Company. Her name is Lee Chamberlain. She also coincidentally was Angie's mom on All My Children.
We have James at 15 to thank for Dawson's Creek because the creator of Dawson's Creek, Kevin Williamson, has said, my favorite show was James at 15. And that was the sort of inspiration for this show. I just remember that James talked the way I talked and also said the things I wish I could think of, the things I thought when I was lying in bed at midnight.
That matches. So that totally matches.
Exactly.
Dawson's Creek might be the closest thing we have to, I mean, it got a little soapy, but its origins were exactly that. What do kids really do and what do they really think? I also think when he talks about he spoke the way I spoke. There were a couple of words that I picked up on that I didn't know that were clearly slang. Well, they start using gross a lot and gross. I'm like, this is the advent of gross because we didn't always say gross. That was a new word at one point, and it was right around 1970, 1978. The other word they use a lot is grungy. I feel so grungy. I don't know. I'm kind of grungy today. Do I look grungy? There's a lot of grungy. And then the other one was, she's quite a snuggie. Like a cute girl walks by. Oh, she's quite a snuggie.
I like that.
And I even rewound it. Like, are they saying snuggly? No, she's a snuggie. She's quite a snuggie.
at one point, the little sister asked James if he was going with a girl.
Yeah.
And I remember that was what we used.
We when said going with.
It wasn't like going steady or going out.
Dating.
With.
It, was just, it wasn't
you're
dating.
Going with.
Yeah.
And you would say, did you know that Mark asked Trisha to go with him?
Or yes.
When, you, go with him. Or yes. When I had a boy ask me, will you go with me?
Yep. Right.
I remember my stepfather used to give us such like shit about it. He'd be like, go. Like,
where?
My sister was like, Michelle's going with, you know, whoever. They'd be like, where are you going? Go where?
And my mom would ask about my friends. She'd be like, oh, are they going steady? Like, oh, mom. That's so happy days.
Oh, that's so antiquated. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That stuck out to me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's right. And going with. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't make any sense. But that was what we used.
Well, I think that one thing that James at 15 did, it's very clear, was show the kids and teens of the 70s, the kids and teens of the 70s. There was no storytelling or mythology about what adolescence should look like or should not look like. It just showed you what adolescence did look like, all through the eyes of one very ordinary, relatable, under-tall, but Tiger Beat-worthy character named James, who represented all of us. Thank you so much for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And we'd like to give a huge shout out to our incredible patrons. You guys keep the lights on around here and are the main reason we are able to keep on trucking. Today, we're giving a big thank you to patrons Rose, Allison, Liz, Marilyn, Sean, Courtney, Carla, Aaron, Debbie, Lisa, Angela, Christine, Amy, Denise, and Tanya. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, you guys.
Yes.
If you would like to check out our Patreon page and just kind of see the perks that our patrons get as a huge thank you from us, just go to patreon.com, patreon.com, and Pop Culture Preservation Society right up in the search box.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company, to good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers!
Yay, cheers! Cheers!
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you. Spread